Welcome to the Aligned Musician Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly Hankins, and I'm a violist as well as a yoga and breathwork facilitator. I created this podcast to empower musicians like you to find your own path towards healing and normalize conversations around musicians' wellness. I'm so grateful for your support and thank you for joining me. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Aligned Musician Podcast. I am so excited to share this episode with you. I had the honor of interviewing Simone Seals last week. They're a cellist. They do a lot of improvisation, and she is doing so many amazing things. And I found them on Instagram a while ago because of their posts regarding trauma-informed music teaching. And I just felt like that was so amazing because there's not a lot of musicians doing that. This was such a great conversation that I had with Simone. And before this episode started, we both realized that we're from Central Florida and that we have a lot of the same connections in common. And it just such a beautiful reminder how small the music world really is. And also how needed trauma-informed language really is in the music community. We recorded this episode on Instagram Live, so there will be some moments where we answer questions that came through during the episode. But if you have any questions for Simone or for myself, please feel free to reach out over Instagram or through Simone's website. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, hello. My name is Simone Seals. I am, the way that I introduce myself sometimes is I'm a classically trained cellist who's tired of playing music by dead white men. I do also play their music. It's just not what I do for fun and all that stuff. So I like to make sounds. I improvise mainly now and play a lot of contemporary music. And I just like playing the cello and communicating things through sound and
I love that. And actually, it was really funny because before we started this live, we found out that we're both from Florida and we know some of the same people, which was really cool. Yeah. and I had no idea. I was really drawn to your page on Instagram, I think is how I found you, because you are so creative. You're posting your own like free improvisations on the cello. You have some posts on how to be more trauma informed, which I really appreciate and I feel like is so needed in the music world. I don't know. Could you just share a little bit about your background and maybe your musician's wellness journey?
Yeah, sure. So I've always been interested in psychology. I thought I was going to double major in psychology and music. And then I had a teacher I didn't really get on with in high school. And I was like, I don't want to study psychology if it's going to be like this. So I just kept reading books on my own about human behavior and all this stuff. And I kept practicing the cello. And then in my last year of undergrad, I took a strings pedagogy class and I didn't really like the person teaching it. I didn't like his approach to teaching, and I thought it had a huge gap in understanding people and mental well-being. So for my final, I wrote a paper on trauma-informed teaching, and that's sort of how I went down the rabbit hole of really practicing it myself and researching more about trauma and how it affects the body, how it affects the mind. And I try and find ways for myself to use music as a way to heal and feel grounded and can reconnect with my body. So this last year that everyone, we've all been in the panorama together, I really took the time to just feel and use sound as a way of communicating my emotions. Because it's funny how no matter how much therapy you have, sometimes just saying how you feel with words is really difficult. And the way that I can really easily communicate my emotions is through the cello. So I would just sit in the living room and like cry and like make gross sounds. And I found that really helped. And I found a way of really concentrating on how my body is feeling and then trying to translate that through music. And that's really what I enjoy doing. And working with poetry as well, I found, because I've always loved reading and writing, but I sort of stopped writing, and I found that using poetry as a way of, because you feel it. I mean, I feel it when I read poems. I'm like, dang, that hit. And like, I would think about how I feel about it, and I would translate that into sound. So, because I've started doing work with actors and devising music for theater, and it's all about just feeling those words and the meaning behind those words, and trying to turn it into cello sounds. So that's sort of been my journey with wellness.
I love that. And I think so much of the conversation that's happening in the musicians' wellness community is around how, like, our instruments, the repetitive movement of playing so many times, the same exact thing over and over can really be damaging on our bodies. But I think what you spoke to is also so true that music really is a healing modality in a lot of ways. And especially, in the classical music world, where we often may be encouraged to perform in a certain way that may not be authentic for ourselves, like really taking the time to ask ourselves how we feel and like what sound that would represent can be such a beautiful way of like embodying ourselves and moving through that and having it be this like cathartic healing process. And I just think that's so incredible. And so I imagine like improvisation is a part of that. Did you start out improvising at like when you first started learning music, or was it something that kind of evolved as you moved through your journey
Yeah.
learning the cello?
I was introduced to improvisation. I remember the exact moment I learned about improvisation. I actually was just writing about this. and it was at the Sphinx Performance Academy. And it was with, I remember Jesse Montgomery. And then there was a few other people whose names are escaping me right now. But they had like a quartet of and they were talking about how to use improvisation as a way of really connecting and getting a group sound and being able to communicate with your instruments. And we then like we did it through vamping. So it'd be like, oh, come up with like a rhythm or a little, and then just keep playing it over and over again. And then someone add like a texture or do a melody over it. And I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I found it came really naturally to me to just like come up with a vamp or come up with something and play over it. And I wasn't as afraid of doing that as I was like playing Bach for people or something like that. But I definitely started off sort of reading music first. I learned music by ear. Mostly I would listen to recordings over and over again. And then I would use the music as a guide to like figure out the rest of the notes. But yeah, it was an undergrad where I found out that my teacher was like, I think you might be dyslexic because you aren't reading these rhythms right, and that doesn't make sense. because I was like, oh, that's how I heard it in the recording. So I was just like mimicking things instead of actually being able to decipher rhythm. So for me, improvisation is, yeah, I did it maybe, let's see, 4 years or so after I started playing the cello, I started improvising, and then I've been doing that ever since.
That's awesome. And so, yeah, is that still true today? Like, is it easier for you to play improvised music than it is to play Bach or to play music
Oh,
by old white men?
100%. If someone asks me to play something, I'm like, do you want something written or improvised? I much prefer playing improvised music and just, yeah, making it up on the spot. I find is easier to do than having to remember all the notes on the page.
And I love your improvs. I was just listening to some of your stuff that you have on SoundCloud, and I know you have a bunch of improvisations on your Instagram account too. So, like, to listeners, definitely check those out. You're doing some really awesome stuff.
Thank you.
So, what kind of inspired you, I guess, to start collaborating with poets and spoken word. I know you said that just like the emotions and the embodiment of whatever it is you're feeling, allowed, you're feeling kind of similar ways about music as well as spoken word. And so have you found that combining them together has led to anything interesting, or like, has there been any kind of revelations around that for you?
Yeah, I was just sorry, I'm looking at like the people who joined, and I saw that my AP Lit teacher joined. And this is actually kind of relevant. So in my AP Lit class, I didn't it's not that I didn't like analyzing like text, but we watched a movie once and we had to analyze the character's motives, and I said, could I do the music instead? And like I wanted to analyze how the music emotionally affected the story. And I think from it was really from there that I became interested in like how word like music can affect words and affect imagery and all this stuff. Because I started working with actors first and in text in that way, and I would feel how they, embody the text for themselves and became these people. And I'm absolutely fascinated by actors and their ability to become different people. And even though I know them, I'm like, I believe that's a different person. Like it's I love it. So I started doing that first. And then over this last year working with poets and spoken word, I just yeah, it became just another way of connecting to people. I really wanted to collaborate with poets because I think it's so cool. Like if someone were to put words to my improv, I would think that's incredible. So I wanted to like do that for someone else, like transform the medium that they've created, and to also share with people how their art has affected me. Because I think that's the coolest thing about being a musician is that we're always affecting people in some way, whether they hate it or love it or feel neutral about it. Like, to get people to even think about something without really meaning to get them to think about anything, I think is really cool. So I wanted to collaborate with non-musicians to show, I don't know, I don't want to say like solidarity, but like that you're affecting me too, and the way that I affect you, you affect me. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Wow. I mean, that's something that I've never considered doing, but I think it can be such a powerful collaboration, especially with the right people. And so, do you have any like words of wisdom or advice for musicians or maybe for non-musicians even who are interested in collaborating in this kind of way and like how to get started in that?
Yeah, I think if you really like someone's work, just reach out to them. I think it's important to truly like someone's work and have a conversation with them. Because I think sometimes there's this thing of a pressure to collaborate with people who could maybe get you somewhere. Especially, of course, we all want to branch out and to network and to have avenues, but sometimes that's not the healthiest for us if we're going to talk wellness. So like there's some people that even though they could help you get somewhere, you might not get along and you might not work well as collaborators, and that's okay, but you have to like be willing to not do that thing, and maybe you can collaborate in other ways that aren't creating art together. But yeah, I think just really being honest with yourself and how you work and knowing what you want. And I mean, I'm the type of person who, if I want to collaborate with someone, it's just a feeling. It's like, oh, I think that I'm really gonna get along with that person. I really want to do something with them. And it's like a gut instinct that even if I have no idea what I want to do, I'm just like, hey, I love your work. I want to do something. I'm sure we can figure it out or have a conversation about it.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, I think I know exactly what you mean because there's been situations in my life where someone's bio and their resume just looks incredible on paper. And then you go to work with them, and the way that you approach music or the way that you want to share ideas is just so completely different. And I think that there's sometimes a beauty in that there are that many possibilities in music, or that many, like, that wide of a spectrum of possibilities to choose from. But at the same time, like, when we're actually working with someone or trying to create something together, and it's just like this the whole time, like, that's not the best way to move forward. And I think, yeah, there's some benefit, I guess, in like learning how to navigate those relationships or those collaborations. But yeah, at the end of the day, is that going to be a product that you're happy with, or that you feel truly expresses what it is that you're trying to say? Or is what is coming through energetically just this, like, oh, we're gonna try to make this work?
And I think it's important to note that, like, sometimes when you don't get along with someone, you can be like, oh, that person sucks. It's like, no, like, that person doesn't suck. You just don't get along. I mean, I've definitely, in early on when collaborating with people and I didn't get along with them, I was like, oh, they're just like a garbage person. It's like, that's not necessarily true. And as I've gotten older, I can appreciate the differences in approach and that we have this diversity of thought and that they're bringing something to the table that maybe I just don't need in my life, but someone else might, and that's cool. And you can celebrate that person and like want them to succeed and just be like, you're on your own path, I'm on mine, and that's dope.
Yeah, I really love that level of like complete acceptance for everyone, and that is such a hard lesson to learn. I know my early quartet experiences, I'm sure that people who knew me from those days probably hate my guts now. They're like, you're talking on mental health and like trauma-informed language. Like, Kim, you were the worst person at that. And I think that actually, yeah, like I've had such a huge change in the way that I talk to people and the way that I've collaborated over the last 15 years since I've, started playing viola and started really playing chamber music. And I still feel like I'm working on that, and I still feel like I'm growing in that area. But it's like approaching collaboration with like an openness, or even conversations with just an openness and a willingness to listen, even if you don't agree in that moment. I think so many amazing things can come out of it, and it can be such a way of learning that acceptance can be a way of feeling more at peace when you are in situations where egos might be involved or just differences of opinion.
Yeah, I think there's sometimes, I mean, I've definitely had some negative quartet experiences where everyone like butts heads and it's not great. And I think as long as sometimes you don't get along as people, but you love the music and like you love the art that you're creating and you do it for that. And then you might not like talk to one another outside of that. It's not this like lovely, I mean, thinking of those. I just saw recently the Jacqueline Dupre like playing with like the Trout and how they all get along together and like we all want this ideal relationship with an ensemble that we all love one another and are like a family. But sometimes when you're a family, you still don't talk to each other every day. So, but you love one another, and I think that is just like sometimes you don't like their personalities, but they bring that thing to the table and it's extremely valuable and you love that. I've had those experiences where I'm like, oh, I don't really like talking to you every day, and I wouldn't like invite you out for dinner. But like when we're in the same room making music, it's magic. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, what came to mind for me was like the stories of like the original Guarneri String Quartet and how they'd always take like four different modes of travel to the same performance because they just wanted to maximize the time they spent apart because they would spend so much time together practicing and rehearsing. And that's definitely important too.
Yeah, good to know boundaries. Boundaries are good.
So, with your research in trauma-informed approaches in education, do you find that since learning that it's changed your ways in collaborating or your ways that you approach teaching, or working with others?
Yeah, I definitely have more patience. And I don't take it, things so personally. It's like, yeah, I feel kind of bad for the students I ta taught when I was an undergrad because I like was not, that was oof. I was not the best, and that's actually why I don't teach as much anymore. I'm like afraid of like being a bad teacher in the sense that like I'm not empathetic. Like I'm afraid that someone will have an unempathetic experience that will like completely shape their musical life. And I know that's like it's not that big of a deal, but because I look back and see and I like see how I was, I'm afraid of being that way again. So yeah, it's definitely changed my approach to teaching and to really every aspect of my life and just thinking about how people are relating to one another. Because like a student teacher relationship, especially in music, because it's usually one-on-one teaching, is so vulnerable and it can be really special and it's very different from other student teacher relationships because sometimes you're like playing a piece of music, Brahms E minor. I remember I loved the first movement of that song. It was the first piece that ever made me cry. The ending of that first movement. And you get asked like, how does it make you feel? And you have to tell this teacher how something makes you feel. And first of all, you have to know how it makes you feel, like even have the language to describe feelings. And then be honest about how it makes you feel. And then trust the teacher that they're going to hold that and not make fun of you and not do any of that stuff. So I think that I'm very careful about making space, and I don't care as much anymore about like technical ability and like getting past auditions and all this stuff. I think that's really important to have to like prepare people for competitions and auditions and all this stuff. And it does, there is some mindset that goes into that, like of sport. But for me, what I want to teach is I want people to have a good relationship with their instrument. I want people to be able to express themselves on their instrument, and that is what I want people to go away with, like any student to like maybe like of course we'll like teach scales and all that stuff, but the biggest thing is that they know that they can go to that instrument and express themselves, and then through that they'll want to know how to play better and how to express themselves better, because that's the only re the motivate the only thing that motivated me to improve my technique was I wanted to express myself better. I didn't care about being the best. I was like, I want to play that piece that makes me cry, so I need to be able to do these things.
Yeah, and for people that have experienced trauma, or we're finding out even just for people that have had high stress levels, like chronic stress, that it's really hard to truly know what it is that you're feeling in any given moment and then let yourself feel that. And so I think, like, I can speak from my own experience that it was absolutely challenging to be able to even identify how a piece of music made me feel, because that felt, first of all, scary to let myself feel anything. But also in a professional setting, quote unquote, like be able to then translate that into words that another person could understand. And that requires such a huge amount of vulnerability and trust. And if you're a person who struggles with trust, even trust in yourself, how are you supposed to suddenly trust another human being? And I feel like that trust can be maybe broken so easily in a student-teacher relationship, because in our craft, in our tradition of learning music, there's no education on like psychology or like even I mean, it's so ironic in some ways that becoming a music education major requires you to take all of these courses and really learn about child psychology on some basic level. But then the people that end up becoming private teachers, who end up becoming teachers at like universities, are the people who were oftentimes performance majors and had zero training in that area.
Yes.
And when we're met with this idea of like child psychology, I think a lot of us are so quick to dismiss it because it's like, oh, I didn't have to learn that at school. It must not be important. Same with like, I think a lot of the musicians' wellness topics that we could talk about. But yeah, it really is so important to just have this understanding that like the person who's coming to learn from you, who's coming into your studio to learn from you, may not trust you at all, but
Yeah.
also may not trust themselves and may not
Yeah.
be able to have the vocabulary or the confidence to be able to talk about it to you yet.
Yeah. I think that there's something that I think about a lot, because think about performers who then become teachers and things like that, is that you sort of have to have some level of self-awareness about what you are feeling. And that, I think, there are some people that are naturally empathetic and they naturally connect to people. I think that's lucky. I don't think that is easy for everyone to do. And I think those people tend to become like teachers rather than like just solely focus on teaching and all that stuff. And I've lost my train of thought. There is something there. Repeat the last thing you said if you remember what it was.
Oh my gosh. Just that the student who's walking into your studio may not trust themselves, they may not trust you, they may not have the
Yeah.
vocabulary to like talk on what their experience is.
Right. So the reason I brought that up was because if you yourself aren't able to identify what you're feeling, as a teacher, as an adult, it can be really hard to then create that space for another person and to recognize that in another person. Because the thing that has helped me be more compassionate to others as well as myself is seeing aspects of myself in other people. Seeing that, like, oh, that person's a bit irritated, but like I was like that at the earlier this morning, so I don't know what's going on in their life. It has nothing to do with me, but I hope they have a better day. And like with a student who comes in and is maybe disengaged or disassociating or something like that, I think it can be frustrating because as a teacher, you want them to like be in it and love it as much as you do. And like you showed up this morning to teach this kid, so they better show up to play some music. But sometimes, like as a teacher, you didn't want to show up that morning. And you can see that that kid also didn't want to show up that morning. And you can be like, okay, we both don't want to be here right now. So how can we make this enjoyable for the both of us? I think, I don't know, possibly I can be too honest in how I'm feeling with students and or with people that I'm working with. But like, why not be honest? Because you might as well, instead of like, faking it. Because I find that usually as soon as I say, I don't want to be here right now, I then feel better and like can engage more. Because then otherwise you're just sort of sitting there thinking, wow, I really don't want to be here. Like I wish, like I want that person to just like disappear. And you end up thinking about that the whole time. But as soon as you let that thought out, like I don't want to be here right now, or like I'm just in a bad mood right now. It has nothing to do with you, but I'm just in a bad mood. And it's gone. It, like you've said it, it's out in the universe, and you can sort of be in the moment instead of ruminating on that feeling. So I just think being able to create that space at and expressing yourself is how you teach others to express themselves. By being open and honest, and you're just like, oh, okay. The amount of times that I've been able to communicate things just because I heard my friend say something similar, like I heard my friend express themselves that way, and I thought that worked really well. So I'm like, okay, well, my friend was in a similar situation, so, and they said this, so I'll say this, because that fits. And then it's all about, just working it out and gathering information. That's what we do. That's how babies interact. Like, they just are mimicking everything they hear around them. And we don't really ever stop doing that. The amount of things that I've learned from reading books and TV shows and like relating that to my own life and then like saying my own version of them. Same thing can happen in a practice room where the teacher maybe has a phrase that they say over and over again. And then you're teaching a lesson years down the line. You're like, oh, I'm saying that same thing that my teacher always said to me. And if you're lucky to have a teacher who is empathetic, you then know how to be empathetic, and you can spot when people, other teachers maybe are lacking in that skill. And you can maybe either be like, oh, maybe they never had a teacher that was empathetic with them, and that's why they're a bit rude and things like that. Or yeah, it's all about just creating space and like knowing that students are learning from you, not just from the words you say, like about music, but like how you say anything in that space of time. I think just being super honest is a key.
That's so true that, we're not just teaching music in lessons. We're actually modeling to our students how teachers behave and how teachers hold space for others. And then when that student goes on and starts teaching themselves, like they start to imitate whatever it is that's been modeled for them because that's what they've been shown as a healthy student-teacher relationship or what is considered to be the norm. But it may not actually be that at all whatsoever. Something that I've learned from my own trauma studies is that for children, especially children immediately, they pick up on the nervous system of the closest adult to
Yes,
them when they
co-regulation.
perceive as safe. Yes, and they co-regulate. And so in private lessons, your student's trying to regulate their nervous system to you. They're trying to pick up on whatever it is that you're sensing, and allow that to be a way to feel safe. And if you as the teacher are feeling anxious or nervous, then your student's going to pick up on that, even if it's not ever said or even realized on a conscious level, which is super interesting to me.
Co-regulation, I can get in a rabbit hole over because I'm fascinated by it. And I read something recently where it was like, even though we speak and we have, like, as adults, we have the ability to, use language to communicate how we're feeling, our first thing that we did was co-regulate through our nervous systems. Like, as babies, we can't really say, like, hey, I'm hungry, or like, hey, I'm sad. You just sort of like feel it, and someone is there to hold you and comfort you, and that then teaches you how to regulate yourself. So, I mean, it's all about vibes. I know some people don't like the word like vibes, but it's really like you feel the vibe of a room. It's almost instantly when you meet someone, whether like you're gonna get along or okay, you're like lukewarm about them, or you're like, no, I don't want to talk to that person, because like it's the energy. And I've definitely had lessons. I mean, it's a thing when you're in a studio class with someone and you also like is like, Mr. or Mrs. whoever like off today, and like, oh yeah, they seem kind of irritated. It's like, okay, so it wasn't me then. It's like, no, and like, and you find out that whole day, like everyone was like, oh yeah, I thought that teacher was a bit off. You're like, okay, like you sense it no matter if the teacher says anything or not.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
which is why I'm like, I think people should be just be honest, being like, I'm kind of having a bad day. You're like, dope, it's not about me.
Right, because that instantly like it makes the students like stop worrying about the reason for you being off. And then it gives them a reason because I know for a lot of times like I had a teacher that 1 week would be super enthusiastic, super upbeat, super happy. And then the next week was just like super serious, seemed very strict, very cold. And it was kind of hard because I never knew what kind of mood this person would be in our lesson, which made me feel very unregulated. I think I was able to at least acknowledge that on some level, like, oh yeah, I have to feel very like safe in my own body before I go into this lesson because I don't know what I'm gonna be met with. And I have found myself really worried, like, oh my gosh, is it me that's creating this like weird dynamic sometimes? And sometimes, we don't feel safe talking about that with our teacher, but I think like the more that we can self-regulate our nervous system and find practices that help us feel safe in our own bodies is a big part of this work too.
Yeah, that's because it's also outside of those one-to-one sessions. I think a lot about in higher education, like college and things like that, how a lot of people are suddenly on their own, away from their families for the first time, don't really have a support system that they can just turn to. And a lot of bad things can happen in college. You're in out in the real world all of a sudden, and it can be really scary. And you either rebel or you're a goody two-shoes and all these things. Like the university systems themselves also have to have some safeguarding in place for these people who are entering a completely different world. That okay, you may not know how to like talk to that teacher, but at least maybe there's another teacher on campus who you can talk to about these sorts of things. And like creating an environment where all the staff you have is trauma informed. Like that if you have one bad experience with a teacher, that doesn't make or break it because there are other people there to support you, and to guide you through this new experience of entering university life. Or even if you are, an older adult or someone who's not like 18 going to college for the first time, that you can have the conversations with others and not feel left out or things like that. I think like one-to-one teachers need to have trauma-informed teaching, but also higher education systems need to really put in place these sorts of practices.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that for myself, I didn't even realize how much it mattered until I finished my first like trauma-informed yoga certification, and I was like just blown away by how much teachers in general, or I guess humans in general, are just unaware of the way that we choose to interact in society, and how oftentimes, like more times than not, it's actually not a conscious decision. And I think for me, I always had empathy for people, but I definitely was a more judgmental person, I think, because if I was met with somebody that had an anger issue or just didn't know how to communicate well, or whatever the case may be, putting a label on that person and being like, oh, I don't want to interact with this person. I don't want this person in my life. But understanding that, like, the way that most people interact is based on, the way that our nervous systems are regulated, what kinds of behaviors were modeled for us, what trauma we have, and what triggers are there. And I think there's triggers with a little t, and there's triggers with like a big
For
t,
sure.
as in like full-on flashbacks or emotional flashbacks that may not be rooted in actual memories, but feeling, for those with like certain kinds of PTSD, people can actually have like full-on body flashbacks without necessarily the memory. And it can be really challenging for people with trauma to like interact and to be able to have certain conversations and navigate through that. And then if those people become teachers, which can happen, which I think is common, it's just not talked about, it can be so easy for those teachers to then become triggered or not know how to hold space because they still have their own life experiences that they're working on. And so I think trauma-informed training gives us this like way of understanding each other in a way that we can hold space for each other, even if we don't understand or have the same life experience as someone else, which I think is so important, even if empathy is a struggle, you know?
Yeah, because there's like, I mean, the different ways of knowing, you can logically know that maybe someone is angry all the time, but it has nothing to do with you, and you logically know that. But then to emotionally know that and to be able to regulate yourself or to draw boundaries so that you are emotionally okay and emotionally regulated is more challenging, I think, because I mean, I can get into a whole thing about like emotional knowledge and being connected to emotions. And I mean, because I myself struggle to say how I feel. I do it through an instrument instead of words. So I know it's really hard to say emotions, but the best thing that anyone can do for themselves and the best thing that I've done for myself is to just be able to recognize like how I'm feeling physically. And then if I can label it, cool. If I can't, that's also cool. And I'm just going to like acknowledge that it's happening. Because like being disconnected, being for me, being disconnected from my body was not healthy. It was a safety mechanism that lasted for how long it needed to last, and then it became for me a problem. Because I didn't know how to reconnect. And that's the other thing about like trauma. The body knows how to heal trauma. Like it's trained to do that. We've evolved to be able to last this long. We understand the body intuitively knows how to heal trauma. It's when the process is stopped because it may not have been safe to actually go through that healing process. That's how you have like these PTSD, complex PTSD, things like that. Once it's the issue is when the body isn't able to process the trauma, and you have to sort of there are various methods of going back and being able to do it safely. But yeah, this just trauma's wild. Trauma's a wild ride, and I think the best thing for me has been understanding that my body knows what to do. It holds it trauma in weird places. Sometimes I'm walking down the street and I'm like, oh, my teeth are just clenched. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. I acknowledge it and that's fine. Or I get like my left shoulder hurts and that's where I'm like, oh, something's coming up for me. And like, I just let it do its thing and I give myself time and I give myself rest. And I let my body do what it needs to do because I've learned that I know some of my friends would be like get shaky when they're anxious or having a panic attack or something like that. And it can be scary if you've never had a panic attack before. You like want to stop the thing. It's like, no, let it happen. Like let it go, because like your body's just trying to regulate itself. And that is the best thing you can do for it, is to just like ride it out and let it happen, know you're okay. But that's where education comes in again. If you don't know that's what happens in a panic attack, that you might feel like you're having a heart attack or that like you're dying, then you're gonna freak out more and it'll like keep cycling. Whereas if you know, hey, in the event of a panic attack, you might feel this and this might happen and it's okay, but just, you know, go on with your life. And it's like, okay, because I mean, some people go their whole lives without having panic attacks. I'm jealous.
Me too.
yeah. But some people have had frequent panic attacks or later in life start having, you know, mental health problems. And if you know about it and what happens and have a support system, then you'll be okay. But trauma comes up when, or trauma sticks around when we're lacking those resources.
And it can be so hard to let ourselves fully feel those things too, because I'm just thinking about like, you know, if I feel something coming up in my body, like you're saying, and I'm working on embodiment and feeling that emotion or feeling that stuckness or whatever it is, physically or emotionally. And I am at home, or I'm like in a practice room, cool. Like I can feel safe letting that emotion come through. But like, what if I'm on stage? What if I'm in a studio class in front of a bunch of my peers who all play the same instrument as me, and I start getting that panic attack? I think that's the place where it's like, oh, I can't feel this right now. I need to shut this down because it's not safe to feel that way. And then it can be really easy, I think, to then teach ourselves that, like, oh, when I'm playing, at least this is my own experience. I can only speak from my own experience. But I feel like my journey with performance anxiety partially was because I was experiencing a lot of panic attacks. But I was like, okay, when I'm performing, I can't feel that way. So I'm just going to shut it down. And that just made it a million times worse.
I'm probably one of the few people who doesn't really get performance anxiety. And I've definitely like had a shaky bow and I'm like, that's annoying. Like I remember thinking like, come on, arms, stop. But I think that like, yeah, what you said, this thing that you think that you shouldn't feel that way. It's like, no, like stop feeling that way. It's gonna make it harder to play. It means, I think reframing, that's what helps me. I almost will never say that I'm nervous. Like, even if that's what I feel, I'm not gonna say that. I'm gonna say that I'm excited because it's like the same physical reaction. Like, oh, when you're excited to like meet up with your friend and like you're like, ooh, not seen them in ages. It's that same feeling of like kind of nervous, like, oh my gosh, what if it's awkward? Like, I've not seen them in like 3 years. Or it's the same feeling of like, oh my gosh, I'm about to go on stage in front of all these people. And I learned early on that like if I just say that I'm excited, then like I won't feel as nervous. Like the negative emotion, won't feel as scary because I know that excitement is good and like I have a positive experience feeling excited. So I'll just say that I'm that. Even if someone asks me if I'm nervous and I am, I'm gonna be like, I'm excited. Don't talk to me anymore.
Well, yeah, excited allows for so much more possibility, and it's such a more like empowering reframe, and I really love that. And I think, there are ways of, yes, acknowledging our emotions, but also putting them in a way where we're not like continuing the perpetual self-abuse internally, but we're actually allowing for other possibilities.
Yeah, I think it's just allowing yourself to imagine something good. Because I think being when I've said that I'm nervous, I'm imagining all the things that could go wrong. Like, I'm nervous about like what if I miss that shift? And when I'm excited, I'm like, wow, I'm so ready to nail that shift. Like, I'm so ready to make everyone weep. Like how good that shift's gonna be. And like I become my own hype man. Whereas like if I'm feeling nervous and I have all those thoughts, I'm like tearing myself down. Like you said, like it becomes this negative train of thought. And I think that is where when my friends who've experienced performance anxiety, I've seen that's where that they go, a bit off, is that there's thing that all the things go wrong. And it's like, dude, you've practiced for like hundreds of hours. You should just be excited to finally be done.
Absolutely. And I think, I don't know, just a realization that I'm having during this conversation that I've never quite put together this way is just how, since I'm a yoga teacher and I'm coming to a lot of this trauma-informed language stuff from that perspective, like there's so many studies that have been done on like embodiment and, trauma-informed yoga and how like allowing yourself through this, through embodiment practices to allow yourself to heal. And that includes like art therapy, but wow, music therapy, like playing music and learning how to express yourself and to feel whatever you're feeling through that mode of expression can also be a way of embodiment. And I just think that that's so beautiful.
The one thing that I wish for every professional musician is to experience the healing power of music, because we have music therapy for people who are often non-musicians. And we're like, music is so healing, like do all these things and heal your own psychological traumas. And then the musicians doing that aren't finding the same benefit, because we worry about like paying our bills and the next gig and all this stuff. But like just
Or,
take
oh, sorry to interrupt you, but like,
no.
or experiencing trauma in the music studio or in the teacher-student dynamic. And so then, you know, playing an instrument can be such a negative reminder, but in the same way, like we can also use that as like a vehicle for transformation. Sorry to interrupt you, continue.
No, it's a con. That's, I mean, yeah, exactly. It become we can something that I think if you go into the arts profession, you do it because you love it. And then somewhere along the line, a lot of us begin to hate it. I definitely had a period of time where I was like, I don't want to, like, I have to do this because it's the only thing I'm good at. But like, and I want to love it, but right now I like am not interested. It was like, we're on a break. But I wanted to express myself in that same way that I did, like when I first picked the instrument up. When I think knowing that I loved it so much at one point that I could do that again, and like trusting that I could rebuild the relationship with music and and use it as a way of regulating myself and healing myself and embodying my emotions.
That's so amazing. Simone, is there anything else that you'd like to share?
I guess what is like some words of wisdom, or just from human being to human being. Sometimes life sucks, but there's always tomorrow, and it could be better. And that's why I get up every morning. There was a quote. What was it? Hope for tomorrow is what gets us through today. Like this morning, I did not think I would have a good day, and today has turned out to be wonderful. And like that's the exciting thing, is that you don't know what's gonna happen. We literally cannot predict the future. Like I cannot predict what's gonna happen 10 minutes from now. I know that I'm probably gonna be, eating something 10 minutes from now, but I don't know what it's gonna be. I don't know what I'm gonna do in 10 minutes exactly. Just everything will work out.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Simone. It was such a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for taking the time to chat with me today.
No problem. Thanks for asking me to come along.
Yeah, of course. And to anyone who's listening or watching this on the replay, if you want to find Simone, she's at simone.cello, and I can put that in the show notes as well as the comments here. Is there any other ways that people can find you or any projects that you'd like to share?
I have a website, finally made one, simoneseals.com. It's just my name, .com. And then I have some projects coming up, releasing a free improvisation album in the coming months. I don't know when yet. I have to figure out how self-releasing works, but that will be happening. I'm really excited about that. And a short film on Black woman's joy will be coming out at some point in the near future. So yeah.
Amazing. Congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thanks.
I have to
Yeah,
keep an
it's
eye out for
been a wild ride.
that. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And thank you to everyone who's joined us. And hope you all have a great rest of your day. Take care. Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit subscribe, give us a rating, and follow on Instagram at The Aligned Musician. Thank you so much, and take care.